The city of Rancho Palos Verdes has been roiled by Mother Nature for months. Unprecedented land movement has left residents struggling to manage their everyday lives as power and gas is cut off, and the very earth beneath their feet slides away. Today, we look at whether anything can be done to remedy that slippage, and what a group of those homeowners is doing to fight back against what they say was poor planning by City Hall. And this year marks the 50th anniversary of the UCLA Rape Treatment Center. That center provides treatment for sexual assault victims, both adults and children. In addition, it offers sex assault prevention programs. And we talked to a rape survivor who has chosen a unique method of healing herself and helping the cause of helping others heal. Summer Willis is close to finishing her goal of running 29 marathons. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. We've recently been talking a lot about the challenges facing residents of the Palos Verdes Peninsula. Those residents are literally on a slippery slope. Rapidly increasing ground movement has left many of them unconnected to the rest of the world, with their gas and their electricity and cable cut off. And even worse, their homes cracking and slipping because of that moving ground. Joining us now, geologist Michael Phipps. He's a consultant for the city of Rancho Palos Verdes. Thanks for joining us again. We've talked before, and you've had quite the job here the past few months, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It's been very taxing, spending a lot of time down there on the landslide and a lot of manpower thrown at this thing.
We always caution that this show won't air until Sunday, so things could change a little bit between now and Sunday. We never know. Just want to throw that in there, because things could. Just this week, the city had an update on land movement. Is there light at the end of the tunnel? And what's new?
Well, I think there is light at the end of the tunnel. The good news that I delivered to the city council last night was that the landslide is finally decelerating after going through a period of acceleration for, you know, since almost October of 2023. And so things are slowing down, and there are some serious dewatering efforts being undertaken now by the city. They're pulling what would average to be about 6 million gallons of water a week out of the landslide. And we've seen a rapid decline in the movement in response to that. So that's all really good news, because we've shown that we can pull water out of this thing, reduce the pressures that are pushing on the landslide, and slow it down.
Take us back to when things started to get bad. Was that after the winter rains?
Yeah, the big rains in January and February of this year, particularly February, which was 11 inches of rain, I think, in the month of February, falling on the peninsula area, that really had a dramatic effect on the landslide. We noticed the landslide accelerate very quickly right after that, and It went from moving, 6 inches a week to 12 to 13 inches a week. And it continued to accelerate all the way until, early summer started to flatten out. And now we're actually seeing it starting to finally decelerate. Some of that is natural. We haven't had any rainfall for 5 months. But some of it is also due to the dewatering activities that are going on out there.
That deceleration, that's an interesting word I haven't heard around there at all. And so that's happening because of, as you say, natural occurrences and pulling out water. But it seems to me that there's a certain momentum when the ground moves. And so what is it that's kind of doesn't keep it from gravity pushing it further down?
Well, you're right about using the term momentum. I mean, when I say deceleration, really what we were, the analogy is we were going 88 miles an hour on the freeway, and now we're decelerating and we're only going 80 miles an hour now. We're still going very fast. The movements in the past month have been, 2.5 to 4.5 feet just about everywhere. So it's still moving significantly, but what we're seeing is a rapid decline in that velocity. So if that continues, which I expect it's going to continue with the dewatering efforts, lack of rainfall, I think we're going to see it slow down significantly in the coming months.
And just by way of explanation, that water is drawn out of the water with a device called a hydrauger. Is that right?
No, that the hydrauger concept was abandoned because we discovered that the movement is happening on a much deeper landslide surface. The landslide is about twice as thick as we thought it was. So, you know, we had done some exploratory borings to figure that out. And in the course of doing those, we found this deep movement, and we also found this tremendous water pressure underneath the landslide. And so we embarked on a program of vertical dewatering wells, deep dewatering wells, right at the toe of the landslide, on the beach, basically, and are extracting water from that location. And you know, we're pulling out 600 gallons a minute right now, which is a substantial amount of water.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, we're running out of time here, but do you see life getting back to normal in that peninsula area, or is it always going to be a little shaky?
It's hard for me to define what normal is, Hal, because, you know, these people, many of them up there have been living with this landslide for many decades. I mean, the Portuguese bend slide started moving in the late 1950s. So Abalone Cove started moving in the 1980s. So a lot of these people have been dealing with for a long time, but nothing of the magnitude like it is now. You know, I know some people have chosen to leave. Some people, their homes have been red tagged. Other people are showing an incredible amount of resilience, and they're doing everything they can to stay in their homes.
It takes a lot of resilience to be able to do that. We're out of time right now, Michael. But Thanks so much for joining us, geologist Michael Phipps. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we take a look at the consequences of that land movement for the people who live in the area. We talk to an attorney who's filed a lawsuit on their behalf. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and more than 200 residents of the Palos Verdes Peninsula have now lost power and gas service to their homes, causing safety concerns and security concerns. Recently, a lawsuit was filed on behalf of some of those residents. Attorney Terry Bailey is with the Axe Law Firm. He's a partner in that firm. Thanks for joining us. And we just had the city geologists give us a somewhat of a hopeful report, but things have been very difficult for some of your clients.
Extremely difficult. There are two red-tagged homes. Those folks moved out last summer. As of right now, I have six other homeowners who have had to vacate their homes. It's very disruptive, and you know, there's children involved. They had to change schools. People have to find a place to live. For most of these folks, you know, there's sort of a misconception out there. People hear Palos Verdes and they think, "Oh, these are rich people." Okay, we're not talking about multimillionaires or even millionaires out there. Most of the people that live in the Seaview community, which is the community on which we filed the lawsuit,
which is just below Portuguese Bend?
Right. On the San Pedro side of Portuguese Bend. We're not talking mansions here with tennis courts and big pools. Most of these homes are around 2,000 square feet. It's a middle-class neighborhood. We have school teachers. We have contractors, plumbers, fishermen, longshoremen.
And yet that image we're seeing right now, some of that is in Seaview.
That actually there is Portuguese Bend.
But there are homes that are collapsed right down into the ground.
There are, like I said, there's two homes that are red tagged in the Seaview community, and there's six other clients who have had to vacate their homes.
So how did this lawsuit come about?
It's ironic now that I think I have 37 clients retained. We filed the first lawsuit on behalf of 16 folks. Last November, I met with a handful of homeowners down there. Actually, it was down at the beach club. I think I met with five groups of homeowners and looked around and saw what was going on. And I had no idea that it was going to grow to this magnitude. I thought I was going to have four or five clients down there, and it was a small landslide. And over the last year, close to a year now, it was November when I was down there originally, it's the landslide has just grown exponentially, I guess is a good way to put it. I am out there probably at least once a week, and it astounds me every week I go out there to see how much more damage there is.
But we do talk about the notion that As a geologist said in the last segment, there is deceleration going on. But what happened before was very impactful. We saw some people who had to get rid of their gas appliances, replace them with electric appliances in order to have power, an oven, whatever they need to have in the house. And then the next thing they know, the electricity is being cut off, and now some of them are going to solar panels.
Yeah, and most of that was in Portuguese Bend. The power in Seaview was turned off with very little notice, which upset a lot of people. They basically had a couple hours notice that their power was getting turned off. The gas was shut off. We don't know if everything's going to be restored permanently, but they're SoCal Edison and the gas company are working on it.
Who are you suing?
We are suing the city of Rancho Palos Verdes, Los Angeles County, city of Rolling Hills, Rolling Hills Community Association, KCLAD, which is the Klondike Canyon Geological Hazard Abatement District, and
some of these as well, California Water Service Company, some of these as well.
Yeah, Cal Water is the one that supplies water to the area, and they've had close to 100 leaks in the main line. In Portuguese Bend, it's interesting, a good portion of Portuguese Bend, the water mains are already above ground. And that's something that we believe that Cal Water should have done here, is start putting the water mains above ground prior to all this movement. And, you know, it's easy to look at it now and say, well, the earth's moving, that's why the pipes are breaking. But what we believe precipitated a lot of the movement was the main water break in that intersection that's on the screen right there.
The one we're watching. And let me ask you, what do you hope to accomplish with this lawsuit?
There's a couple of things. There's the macro picture, which is, can we get the public entities to deal with the stormwater runoff issues? Because the hillside up above, all the communities up above, they dump all the water. Storm runoff is concentrated into Klondike Canyon, and there are so many fissures now in Klondike Canyon that water never actually makes it to the ocean. It's all going into the landslide and lubricating the landslide. Rolling Hills Community Association, if you can believe this, they're on top of an ancient landslide and they're on septic. All that liquid from the septic is going into the hillside.
You know, we could probably talk for an hour or two about this, but we're actually out of time right now.
That was quick.
Well, it goes very fast, but I know you've got a lot of litigation ahead of you, and we'll be visiting you again on this story. And thanks so much for being with us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we continue our show, this time talking about a very special anniversary, a 50th anniversary of an organization out of UCLA. You're not going to want to miss this. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Hal.
Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. Not long ago on this program, we talked about trigger warnings, and this is one right here. We're going to discuss rape and sexual assault, so this is just an advisory to anyone who might be uncomfortable with that subject. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the UCLA Rape Treatment Center. Clearly not an issue that's going away. Joining us right now, Dr. Julie Banks, Policy and Program Development Director for UCLA Rape Treatment Center and Stewart House. Mimi Morningstar, the Senior Director of Development for the Rape Treatment Center and Stewart House. And rape survivor Summer Willis, founder of Strength Through Strides. And thanks to all of you for being here. And let's start off with Dr. Banks, because we want to talk about some pretty shocking statistics you gave our way. And let's take a look at these.
Yeah.
1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused by the time they're, what, 18 years old?
That's correct.
1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men have experienced a rape or attempted rape in their lifetime. And sexual assault is the most underreported violent crime. And also, between 60% and 80% of sexual assaults are not reported to police. So these are some pretty startling statistics.
Indeed. Yes. It's surprising to most people who hear them.
What do you think is going on here? I mean, you think eventually education and awareness would help to bring things down, but they're going up?
They're not necessarily going up. These statistics have been true for quite a long time. One of the things that we're doing, one of our programs at the Rape Treatment Center, is doing prevention education. So that is one of our goals, is to start bringing these statistics down.
And so you feel that that's what helps, education, making
Absolutely.
People aware. And you start when they're young.
We start when they're young.
But you also are dealing with adolescents. You're dealing with young people when it comes to issues of rape?
Yes. We're dealing with children who are sexually abused, with adolescents, and with adults. So we see people across the lifespan.
And you know, this not only has a physical impact, this has a mental impact, right, Mimi?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we focus on, is a therapy program for adults and children alike, so we can really see people healing from this. That's the opportunity that we have, is to create healing.
And you deal with the LGBTQ community as well. Talk about that for a moment.
We do. We see the LGBTQ community in all of our programs. We offer longer-term therapy. We have an acute clinic where people come for what's commonly known as a rape kit if they've been abused or assaulted in the past 5 days. And all of our counselors and nurses are specially trained to work with many populations, including the LGBTQ community.
You have 24-hour access.
We have 24-hour access for acute services.
Long-term
yes.
care.
Yes.
And so you're pretty accessible, and you have an awful lot of things to offer. So let's talk about the 50th anniversary celebration, because I know that's something you're very excited about. So talk to us a little bit about what's planned for this celebration. And I guess, you know, being the newsman in me, what have you learned over 50 years?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I'll start with a little bit about the event itself, because all of our services are free. We should say that up front. So we raise funds to support these programs, and we do that by this event, which has traditionally been held once a year, but we haven't done this in 5 years, since before COVID. So it's our 50th anniversary. We are celebrating by looking back at our history and talking about where we're going. It's at the Skirball Center on October 27th. We have a lovely lineup of celebrities and people who've been involved for a very long time.
I'm sure it's going to be great. Summer, I need to get to you, because you toured the Rape Treatment Center. It had quite an impact on you as well. Tell us your story. Your story happened when you were a teenager, right?
I was 19 years old, which was a decade ago, and I was drugged and raped at a fraternity party by someone I considered a friend. And a few days later, I found out that it was boastfully written about in their secret fraternity newspaper, and that multiple of the men were arguing over who got to take advantage of me that night. So I felt so ashamed and just mortified that I didn't tell anyone. I didn't get any services. I was one of the 60 to 80% of people who didn't report. But this year, I, after a whole decade, have decided to talk about my story in the hopes that survivors will hear what I needed to hear a decade ago, which is how strong they are and how resilient they are. And while I was running the LA Marathon, I was so lucky to meet the UCLA Rape Treatment Center staff and see all the services that they have for the community. And I was just blown away and just want everyone to know about how amazing they are.
You know, you're running 29 marathons, and I want to know why, but I also want to thank you for speaking, because I know how difficult this must be, especially if you've just started to come out. So talk a little bit about this marathon you're doing.
Yeah. Yes. So I decided this year, when I turned 29, that I was done running away from my trauma, and I was going to face it head on with strength and resilience, and try to be the woman that I believed was taken away from me a decade ago. So I've run from coast to coast, connecting with survivors of sexual assault and so many amazing people, and I've just learned so much about resilience. And I just want all survivors to know that they're not alone. I believed I was, but I've just been welcomed with open arms by so many people and so much love this year, which has been amazing. And I've also learned the power of resilience, because I got last place in my first two marathons. I was not fast. I couldn't run a mile when I started this journey, But last weekend in Sacramento, I got second in my 104.8 miler, four marathons in a day and a half. And so I'm getting stronger mentally and physically, and I've just been so blessed by this year, and only two more runs left.
I think it's remarkable. I'm guessing 29 marathons because you're 29 years old. Is that right? And if so, what is the goal?
It is.
Yeah.
The goal was to finish, and the goal is, I'll run Long Beach for number 28 this weekend, and then Chicago's 29, and I can finally turn 30. But I've also been really lucky to get over $29,000 of donations. And I really want to tell people in the LA community to donate my lucky number $29 to the UCLA Rape Treatment Center, because the average person takes $112,000 to try to heal from rape and sexual assault. And you get all of these amazing resources for your community. So it's really great that you'll have that there.
And I'd love to give you 29 minutes of time to be able to talk to us. But I do want you to sort of sum it up for us. I mean, what has been the impact on you? What has been the impact on those around you, and especially those who are close to you?
I had a woman reach out to me and tell me that she liked herself more before she was abused, and asked if I felt that same way. And I said, yes, I felt that way for years, but because this really bad thing happened to me, I'm now able to see what grit and strength I'm truly made out of. And I just want everyone to know that resilience has always been in you. You tried to walk and fell down a lot when you were a baby, and you got up and kept on going. So whatever your big goal is, whatever you're overcoming right now, like, you can do it. That resilience lives in you.
We've run out of our 29 minutes, Summer, but thank you so much. And thanks for sharing your story. I know these things are very difficult. Mimi and Julie, thank you so much. And Fox 11 News in Depth will continue right after this break. Don't go away.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Just hand everyone. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.